Good morning. You are listening to A Public Affair, KGNU Community Radio. I am your host today, Tish Buford, and in studio we have a lovely, wonderful special guest, Dr. Marcy Eads. She is the author of the upcoming book called Beyond Toxic Niceness, and we're going to discuss how women have been designed and psychologically conditioned to put up with things that they are not comfortable with and deal with not being their true authentic selves and actually being able to deal with difficult situations and still not be able, what's a better word for it, internalize being overly polite. So we're going to talk about how women have dealt with toxic niceness all our lives and how we can get beyond it and still be women, be respected, and also speak our truth to each other and free ourselves of this hostage called toxic niceness. And to help us do it this morning, we have the ever beautiful and highly affluent conveyor of all things regarding gender ideas, Dr. Marcy Eads. So let's give her a great, great, beautiful, warm welcome. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for that lovely introduction.
I do what I can. You know what I mean? I'm short, but I have a long reach.
You do.
So I want to get into that toxic niceness. And I think your title is phenomenal. And I think you've tapped into something that is in the subconscious of most women and something that will never, ever, ever not be a topic because we deal with it in every arena of our lives. Now, before we get into all that, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your background? You are, you have a doctorate, I should say, in sociology, but you're also an author and you're also a speaker and a trainer. And you're just pretty much overall great.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're currently doing
and
what your inspiration was for comprising this book?
Sure. Happy to. And thank you again for that wonderful introduction. So, you know, I really came at toxic niceness from two perspectives. One was personal and one was really my professional and academic background. So I'll start with the personal. I was raised in the Midwest, and any of the listeners who were raised in the Midwest will know that that's sort of a hotbed of toxic niceness. It's a place where you really don't speak your mind and you're pretty indirect. The women in my family were praised for things like never complaining and never rocking the boat. So I learned pretty early that that was where my value was, being nice, being accommodating, being sweet, putting the needs of others ahead of my own. And I grew into a woman who really struggled with that. And as a professional, there are times when I have to be really direct and I can't be overly accommodating and overly sweet in order to be a good leader. So personally, I've had to sort of struggle with that dynamic and how to make that work for my life. Academically, I pursued a doctorate in sociology, and sociologists are trained to look at patterns and culture. And I ended up focusing on gender roles and gender dynamics and landed on this concept, and every woman I've talked to would say exactly what you just said. We face it. It's part of our world. It hasn't gone away. It hasn't changed. And as a sociologist, I wanted to figure out why that's happening and what we can do about it. So the book is really about what is toxic niceness? How do we change it at a cultural level? And how do we as women deal with the pressure of toxic niceness without losing our sanity while we're trying to change the culture?
Absolutely. Now, do you think part of the stigma with this toxic niceness is that the preconceived notion that women can't fulfill dual roles in being feminine, which is our natural inherited traits, and have those run concurrently with being masculine at times when we have to be?
Yeah, I really think there's a cultural dynamic here that no one individual person woke up one morning and said, let's create this cultural dynamic where women only have, let's say, half of the emotions or behaviors that are available to the world. Only half of those are really available to women, and they have to be the ones that are nice and sweet and accommodating. Nobody woke up one morning and said that, but what we've created as a culture is this sort of confusion around, well, if you're a woman, you must be this way. Well, some women aren't. Some women are really direct. Yeah. And in the research that I did for my book, a lot of the women I interviewed said, if they're direct or they're neutral or they're not overly nice or overly accommodating, they get critiqued for that. And they're they're called, you know, difficult, or they have rough edges. And my book is really about understanding that dynamic, becoming aware of it, and allowing women the full range of emotions and behaviors.
And we kind of subconsciously, because of this implied delineation on allowed or permissible behaviors for women, we put a silent censor on ourselves.
Yes, we do.
And that censor becomes more pervasive as you get older. And what I mean, older, from the time you're in grade school as a little girl through, I would say, probably high school is where that is the most tested.
Yes.
And then whatever learned behavior you have from those crucial 10 to 15 years, 18 years of your life, first 18 years of your life, that is what you carry into college, into adulthood. And 9 times out of 10, it normally does not change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of the women I interviewed talk about trying to unwind some of that or unlearn some of that, that when they were younger in their 20s and 30s, they spent a lot of energy worrying about, am I nice enough? How do I be nicer? Now I'm being too nice, and kind of that balance. And once women hit their 40s and 50s and older, they're telling me, you get to a little bit of a place where you're kind of sick of it, and you're starting to say, you know what, I really want to be direct. I want to be more aware of what I want and more real and more honest. And that doesn't mean that you're mean. I'm not advocating for people to not be kind. I'm advocating for awareness about the unfair expectation on women to always be nice. And if we become aware of that and give women more freedom and more choice, then they're able to be more genuinely nice, as well as bold and kind and compassionate and direct and authentic.
Yeah. And authentic for many people means, oh, that means you're going to be uncensored. And I don't necessarily think that's true.
No.
No. So can we get into that a little bit? So, you know, authentic just means you're going to speak your truth.
Yes.
But you're going to convey it in a respectful way that is not going to have residual effects on you.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes. A lot of the women I've interviewed have talked with me about their struggle to be diplomatic and civil while also speaking their truth. And it's not impossible by any means. In fact, it's very possible, and it should be possible. I'm not saying let's do away with civility or diplomacy. We actually need way more of that in our culture right now. But I don't think we get there by forcing half of our population to be fake or disingenuous or inauthentic. And I'll tell you, I ask women in my interviews for the book, how does toxic niceness make you feel? And they told me things like, I feel like it's injecting poison into my body. I feel like I'm wearing an outfit that doesn't fit. I'm wearing clothes that are itchy. I can't focus on what I want to do because all I'm aware of is this pressure to be nice. That's not authentic. And I would argue you can't be genuinely kind, compassionate, or civil with that kind of pressure.
Now, give me an example of some of the toxic niceness that you've tried to alleviate yourself from in your own personal life and professionally, and some of the examples you've seen in people around you.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I have so many stories. You know, I've interviewed 100 women for my book. And every woman has stories. In fact, when I sit women down to do the interview, they just start grinning because they can't decide which story to tell. And
right.
Some of them are funny and some are painful. One of the stories that comes up over and over and over is women in the workplace struggling with emails. And I know that sounds like a small thing, but it's really pervasive. And I've had dozens of women tell me that they've either been told to nice up, and I'm using air quotes, their emails by adding smiley faces, exclamation points. One woman described writing an email and then realizing, oh gosh, I have to go back to the beginning and say, hi, how was your weekend? Things that took time, and the email wasn't necessarily mean to begin with, it just wasn't overly nice. And she knew if she didn't add the overly nice pieces, it would be incorrectly interpreted as mean. That story comes up over and over.
So basically, she subconsciously kind of caught herself and said, oh, I have to go back and add the emotional cotton candy.
That's a great term for it. And yes, she not only subconsciously realized it, she had been told, people read your emails as mean. And if you want your emails to be read as neutral, you need to add this emotional cotton candy. And it takes time, and she's resentful about it.
Because it's fluff.
It is fluff.
There's no substance to it.
Yes.
It's bad for you.
Yes.
It's emotional cotton candy.
It's toxic.
It is very toxic. And I had a similar situation just very briefly where I was just following up to see what work was done. And there were a particular number of orders that were in a queue. And I sent an email to a chain of people who would touch all this information. And the last guy, who was known for his very curt and somewhat rude and abrupt, you know, responses on email, but they're tolerated because they need him and they put up with it because he's a male and they need him. Mm-hmm. They need his expertise. But I got chastised for even asking him, hey, have you seen these 50 or 60 orders? They've been in the pipeline for about 45 days. And then I get sarcasm from him on an open email, which is copied, you know, to several people. Mm-hmm. But there's no repercussions to that.
Right.
And then I tell my boss, hey, did you see how he responded to that? That was a bit much. Well, you know, he kind of has an issue with you. I said, I know this. That's obvious. Well, you kind of came at him. I said, how? I didn't come at him. I just simply said, hey, these have been out for about 45 to 50 days. When do you think you guys can get to them? Mm-hmm. That is not coming after someone. So you had another male justifying and pacifying another male being somewhat rude and unprofessional to a woman. Mm-hmm. But if it was a guy talking to a guy, they would just put up with it.
Yeah.
But we cannot point out their bad behavior because that's toxic niceness.
Mm-hmm.
So you're being a little confrontational. You're not sticking to the toxic niceness.
Yes.
So why are you speaking about this?
Yep.
So you cannot call out bad behavior. And you cannot distribute bad behavior.
Yes. Yeah. And I want to be really clear. My book doesn't blame men in particular for this or any woman in particular. It's a cultural dynamic that's been set up that all of us perceive what we hear through that cultural lens. Mm-hmm. And so the things that a woman says get filtered through this, what I'm calling a toxic niceness lens, which is if it's not overly nice, it's read as mean. If it's neutral in a way that a man can be neutral, it tends to get read as mean.
Right, right. But wouldn't you say, though, that even though this is not gender created, the delineations between the two sexes are pretty much baked in the cake with this?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot that's just baked in.
It's just baked in.
Yeah.
So, you know, she's being a little aggressive. Well, no, I was just simply asking for an update.
Right. And that's actually one of my strategies that I outline in my book. I have a few sort of core strategies. And one of those is men and women, check your perceptions. When someone says something or you read an email, if that had come, say it's a woman speaking, if that had come out of a man's mouth, how would you read it? Would you read it as neutral or would you read it as mean? And same for, you know, if you hear a man saying something, how do you read that? And I think if we all can really notice that and think about, are we reading something as mean when it's actually just neutral? That can help us kind of uncover where it's a perception issue.
Got you. Now, in the upcoming book, Beyond Toxic Niceness, this is a culmination of a lot of work for you, and as well as interviews which you're currently conducting now, which you're going to be doing with more than 100 women. And I know you're trying to look for all age demographics, mm-hmm. cultures, mm-hmm. Professional entities, and walks of life. What is the main theme that you're trying to convey here? What is the main message out of all these interviews that you're trying to relate to the public?
I think there are a couple of things. One is that toxic niceness exists. And if we can all become aware of it as an issue, we can make some progress on it. The second is that there are some strategies for getting the culture to change and also for women to be able to survive until we change it and work toward that change. Circling back to, you know, getting the awareness and the perception up, We really have to start noticing it, talking about it, and naming it. And part of that, you know, every woman I talk to, as soon as I say the words, they know exactly what I mean. And so if everyone who has experienced this and knows in their heart and kind of can feel in their body what this is, if you can start talking about it with people, talk with your families, your friends. I've written scripts in the book. Scripts for turning someone into an ally, scripts for talking to someone who's really difficult. And I actually talk about this in my Surviving the Holiday Guide. If you have a family member that you're constantly having to perform toxic niceness with, for example, that you have a weird uncle who has conspiracy theories and you always find yourself stuck at the dinner table talking to him for 2 hours, could you talk to him in advance and tell him, Uncle Joe, I love you, but just so you know, I'm not going to listen to the conspiracy theories this time. Have that conversation in advance. That way you're not sitting there resentful and angry. You have a graceful but authentic way to deal with it.
And that is a great example of this topic, because I do want to continue this on the other side of our break here, because that is just one of many examples that you could get into about toxic niceness, getting beyond it during the holidays and not just in your regular everyday personal and professional life. So we're going to discuss a little bit more about that on the other side of the break here, but we're going to take a quick break to do station identification for regulatory reasons, because if I don't do it, we'll get in trouble and we don't want to do that. So you're listening to Tish Buford on Community Radio, KGNU Public Affair, and I'm in studio this morning with the wonderful Dr. Marcy Eads, and she is talking about her upcoming book, Beyond Toxic Niceness. And we're going to go ahead and get back into dealing with that with the holidays. And you were talking about the uncle example, and the uncle's not the only one.
Absolutely.
Okay, the uncle is usually the wild card, okay? But usually I have found parents and siblings are the two biggies. So how do you deal with getting beyond toxic niceness and dealing with the holidays with your siblings and your parents and your friends?
Mm-hmm. So my holiday guide to surviving toxic niceness over the holidays gives a lot of strategies. I think I have 12 or 13 strategies in there. A really important one with family and friends, and this is one I'm going to be using this year, and I hope that you do too, and some of the listeners do as well, is to have a conversation before the holidays with your family and friends. Let them know that you have a name for this dynamic that you've been participating in, and it feels terrible to you, and you want to change it in your relationships with them because you love them and you want to have close relationships with them. You want to be able to be authentic, be yourself, have real conversations. Don't wait till you're in the middle of the holiday event, whatever it is, to say, and we're going to change the family dynamic now because that's not going to go over well.
Yeah.
Do it ahead of time. Sit them down, have a conversation. I have scripts that can help people with this. You can go to my website and download those at drmarcyeads.com. And just have the conversation in advance. That's one strategy. Another is to really plan ahead for how you want to spend your time. If you have a number of events with your family, your siblings, your parents, that just wear you out, it's too much. You're going, 14 hours a day, and you're exhausted, and you know that's not going to be fun. Tell them that you're going to say no to some things. There's a strategy in my guide about, kind of jokingly saying to your sister, I have 5 yeses today. Is this one of those yeses you want me to use? Because that's it. Once I hit my limit, I'm going to start saying no. It's kind of a nice, funny way to say, I don't have unlimited niceness in me today.
I love that. Let's say that again for the audience.
To say to your siblings, I have 5 yeses today.
Yes.
Is this one of the things you want me to use a yes on?
Absolutely. And you do not have an unlimited amount of niceness.
No, you don't.
And you know what? People would say, well, that's a mean thing to say. What's that really mean?
It's just honest.
It's just honest. Yeah. It's like you have your bandwidth.
Yeah.
And you're just putting that out there. Yeah. And I think that's awesome. Good. So what else do you have? So you have your siblings and your parents, mm-hmm. and then your friends. So how would you deal with the parents?
Well, one of the things I talk about in my book is the importance of parents teaching their children, especially little girls, to be authentic, to be real. We tell little girls too often to be nice. And then those little girls grow into women who've heard that voice in their head for 25, 30, 50 years. What we need to start saying to our little girls, and I say this in our guide, we need to start saying to ourselves, is replace be nice with be real. And you can tell your parents that too, that I love you. I want a real relationship with you. I'm going to be kind and compassionate, but I'm also going to be real. And so if you make a request of me that doesn't feel like something I want to do, or I hear there's going to be a lot of political discussions over the holidays. You know, if someone says something that you disagree with, you can let them know in advance, I'm going to be real if that happens. We're going to have a real conversation. And that does not mean being mean. I want to reiterate that. That just means being direct and honest, and I would argue more kind.
Absolutely. And I think part of what inhibits people is that they are afraid of being judged as being mean.
Yes.
And they don't want to be viewed as being mean. Yes. And so because of that fear, they tend to internalize what they really want to say. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes toxic, and then it becomes just a learned coping mechanism.
Yeah, it does. It does. And I talk about this in my book, that it's really important to me that we do not blame women for participating in this dynamic. We have been trained and coached in the media, from our families, from our environments, from our teachers, to be nice. And so, surprise, we behave in that way. And,
right.
And so I'm not blaming women for this dynamic. I've said before, I'm not blaming men either. It's really a cultural and societal problem. But women, I would challenge women, when you can, when it's safe, when you're not going to lose your job or you're not in an unsafe relationship, make some changes. Question your habit of responding in a toxically nice way. I've been doing this with myself. It is not easy. I've been toxically nice my whole life. I was actually nicknamed a nicety queen at one point in my life.
Oh, my God.
And I took it as a compliment. I now understand that that's actually not everything I want to be. I am genuinely kind, but I don't want to be a nicety queen.
No.
But so I challenge myself every day, is this response I'm about to participate in toxically nice, or is it authentically nice? And try to challenge it and get out of the habit.
Absolutely. And what are some of the ways to inject reversing this culturally tolerated habit, mm-hmm. Especially with women? Because, I don't want to sound like I'm being demonstrative here, but if a woman is aggressive and if a woman speaks her mind, then she's unfeminine. It's almost like an emotional pageant. Mm-hmm. You know, we have the swimsuit competition. You know, we have the gown competition.
We have the congeniality competition,
right,
in beauty pageants.
Right. So everything's
a perfect example.
Everything's objectified. Mm-hmm. So how do you look? How do you speak? Mm-hmm. Can you walk in a gown? Can you walk in a swimsuit? Mm-hmm. So it's very much a pageantry of behaviors that we're expected to just recite and just be willing to spout off, mm-hmm. With little or no heavy lifting. And that is very cumbersome, and it's very exhausting, mm-hmm. psychologically for women.
It is.
It is.
It is. And when I think about toxic niceness, stay with me here because it's a little bit of a funky analogy, but I think of climate change. Climate change is a huge and overwhelming problem. And when people learn about it and start to face it, they give up because they think, I cannot possibly have an impact on this. Sexism is the same way. We learn about it, we feel it, we know it's there, and we a lot of times give up. How am I going to impact that? But with climate change, what you can do is break it down into little parts and say, okay, I will commute, I'll carpool, I'll ride my bike, I'll try not to fly so much, I'll have a smaller house, I'll insulate my windows, I'll get solar panels. All of those are doable, right? So for me, toxic niceness feels like something that's related to sexism and that inequality and sort of power dynamic that you just described, but it's really tangible. So in answer to your question with strategies, what I argue in my book is the first thing is to notice it. If it's happening on a micro level, notice it, speak it, say it out loud, get everyone around you to notice it. Second, the issue with changing your perceptions, right? So starting to question, if a woman says something, are you judging it because she's a woman, and are you saying it's not nice enough because she's a woman, or is it really just neutral, and is it direct, and is it really fine? the third strategy I talk about in my book is this thing, this idea of habit. If you're in a safe space, if you have enough privilege and power in your life or in a situation to be able to act differently and not perform that toxic niceness, do it. See what happens. It's going to shake things up. I'm not saying do it if you're unsafe. Don't do it if you're going to lose your job. Don't do it if you are in a relationship where there's abuse or you're financially dependent. This is going to kind of wreck your world.
Exactly.
But if you're in a place of a micro situation or you have the power, speak up about it, change the dynamic. And for other women, do it for them if they can't do it. I hear from a lot of 25, you know, women in their early 20s, they're early in their careers, and they are afraid to speak up in a meeting when they've been talked over or when someone has stolen their idea because they know they'll be labeled as difficult. Absolutely. But if I'm in the room with them and I'm older and I have a little more, I don't know, positional power in the company, I should speak up for them. Or if you're the man in the room who's the boss, speak up for that woman. So we all have to support each other and be allies to each other.
I agree. And we need to uplift each other.
Yes.
And if you see someone struggling, give them just a gentle helping hand.
Yes.
Without, what is the term? Help someone with their handicap without displaying that they're struggling.
Right. You don't need to be patronizing, but you can point out, I see this toxic niceness is happening. I see you're in a position with no or less power. I'm going to help you. Someone did it for me. I'm doing it for you.
Absolutely. Now, we're getting ready to wind down here this morning. And two other things I want to ask real quick. So what is the main message you want to convey to women today on how to get beyond toxic niceness? And what should women strive for as their first goal in combating this and slowly trying to turn the cultural perception and tolerance of this?
You know, that is such a great question. I think the most powerful thing for me has been having allies. To be able to say to my closest friends and closest family, this is something that I have struggled with and I want your support and I want you to help me be aware of it. If you can find one ally who will sit with you in this, I think you will find that you have double the power to manage it.
Absolutely. And I agree. And we need to continue to help each other get better with being better conduits and conveyors of just talking to each other.
Agreed.
Because communication has so many different variances and there's so many nuances that go with that. And this is a better way to try to communicate, and it's healthier.
It is.
For your subconscious. And not only your subconscious, but your emotional and mental health.
Agreed. And I think it's going to be better for the world. If we're only showing up with half of ourselves at the table, how is that helping the world? If we can show up completely, everyone's better.
Yeah. And so if we help each other become whole and communicate in a whole fashion, we can just be prosperous and continue to uplift the world.
Yes. Agreed.
And I think that's a great place to leave our conversation this morning. Thank you so much for coming in the studio and discussing this fantastic book. Real quickly before we leave, when are you going to try to get this out to the public?
The book should be out sometime in early 2020.
Early 2020. Great. We'll be looking forward. And we'll definitely have you back here to discuss it again.
Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure.
Oh, we're so glad to have you. Once again, thank you, Dr. Marcy Eads, for being in studio with us. And you have been listening to Public Affair on KGNU Community Radio. I've been your host, Tish Buford. Thank you for tuning in this morning. Stay engaged, stay ready, and always stay very, very positive. Thank you for listening and have a great holiday.